Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Sriram Sundararajan. Sriram is the founder and managing partner of Hypergrowth Labs Capital. He's also a faculty of marketing at Santa Clara University. Sriram, welcome to the podcast.
Christian, first, I want to thank you and Finstrat Management for the wonderful opportunity here. I really appreciate it. It's so wonderful to meet your listeners of the podcast. You have a fantastic series of episodes that you have published so far, and I'm very glad that I got an opportunity here to be featured along with you. Thank you.
Well, our pleasure. And the podcast has been the success that it has because of guests like yourself. There's no shortage of entrepreneurs that we meet who have business ideas, want to bring their companies to life. And as you and I know, it can be extremely challenging. And so if we can help level the playing field or increase their odds of success, count us in.
Awesome. Let's do it.
All right. So with that, why don't we start with Hypergrowth? We'd love to better understand the investment thesis and where you focus your time.
Absolutely. Wonderful question, Christian. I had the opportunity to be an angel investor for a few years before I thought about venture capital as an option. But Hypergrowth Labs, the genesis, was to help startup founders to be successful with their ideas, to help them ideate better, to help them create better products that can solve real problems, and to make sure these solutions reach the market in the most efficient and the most productive manner. That's the genesis of Hypergrowth Labs. And this came about because of my experience being in tech for more than 15 years, both on the industry side as well as on the management consulting side. When I was in PwC, I used to be a management consultant executing engagements for Fortune 500 clients, as you can imagine, and the scale is enormous. But PwC also gave me an opportunity to lead strategic partnerships for Series A through D startups. And I saw firsthand what challenges startups have in not having access to market, but in not even being able to imagine what's the art of the possible. So mm-hmm. I said, how do I make this, possible for startups? And this was my encore attempt at this, by the way, before Hypergrowth Labs, and before I came into tech and management consulting. As I was about to graduate my MBA, I got an opportunity to set up an entity called Build a Venture, which was an accelerator for startups where I could help startup founders from anything from ideation all the way through funding. But I had to shut it down when I actually wanted to, join PwC. And at that time, I made a very conscious decision. And when I came out of PwC, it was a natural choice to go back and work with startups at scale. And that's what led to starting Hypergrowth Labs. To your question on the thesis, Hypergrowth Labs has a seed fund, which is called First Money Fund. And we invest in anybody that has a product that is in the market with zero customers to a few customers to many customers. What we help them with through our vertical stack of partnerships is to take that product to market in the best possible way with the least friction, but in the most productive way for them as well as their customers. That's how we are able to deliver value. We also have a pool of mentors that we bring into play, just like any accelerator would. And the Build a Venture entity that was there before now became an accelerator under Hypergrowth Labs Capital. The advisory part of it is very minimal right now. We try to focus on value-added relationships through partners. It could be someone like Finstrat, for instance, or it could be somebody from a peer accounting perspective or a legal perspective. But we try to make sure we offer the vertical stack of partners to anybody that's part of our portfolio.
Fantastic. So on the fund and focusing on companies that are bringing products to market, what are you currently bullish on? Or do you find yourself gravitating to a certain segment of the market?
How long do we have?
I'm here. Let's do it.
Yeah. So, primarily we started in tech. That's how we started. But as we started looking at multiple industries, life sciences and robotics actually became a field that we see a lot of opportunity, that we saw a lot of potential, actually, that made us invest. We invest as an entity in the US, but for me, I have Vaige Ventures, which is also one of the ventures I have to invest cross-border in India. So India and US happen to be the two markets that I invest in today through the different entities. But if there is an opportunity that doesn't present a conflict, we'll use both entities to kind of invest as needed. Bio and life sciences is a place where we see a lot of potential. And that's just because of the art of possible. As you can imagine, today we have wonderful opportunities where tech has kind of collided with every industry. And that's primarily because of technologies like AI coming into play. And it's created a transformational opportunity across different industries. As a fund, we invest in both primaries and secondaries. We take a very opportunistic approach, or as a firm rather, and we have multiple ways in which we can actually leverage investments, from a primary or a secondary perspective for our stakeholders, our LPs. And so we go cross-sector. So we don't actually like restrict ourselves to one industry. That's why I asked you how much time I have, because Anduril happens to be an investment of ours, and that's actually in the secondary space. Because like, bio and life sciences, is, you can imagine the incubation cycle tends to be longer. You go from selecting multiple molecules to our multiple products that you think you want to get to market to get to probably one. So that's a space that we are ex really excited about. Industrial automation is another example. Something that is in our scope would be robotics or humanoids, rather. So these are spaces where we think there's a lot of opportunity.
So let's if we can unpack robotics.
Yeah.
A lot of different pundits have been so we're recording this early June 2025. In the last few months, a lot of discussion taking place on robotics, especially as it pertains to artificial intelligence.
Yep.
And if I put my forecasting hat on,
Yeah.
imagine that as robotics accelerate. And coupled with just pure AI software, copilots, and now agentic AI,
Yeah.
the landscape of how us as humans manage our lives starts to change materially. It's interesting, one of the things I've had a conversation with I find myself having conversations with a lot of soon to be college grads, like, hey, what's our place in this world if all of a sudden I'm finding that entry-level jobs are being replaced with AI?
Yeah.
Couple that with, a world where there's so much progress taking place within biotech, which could expand longevity. It's are the two things at odds? And I would love to get your take. How does capital get allocated if all of a sudden people, are finding that the robots are doing their jobs, yet they're living longer?
Yeah. Very interesting question. The possibilities are endless because of AI. But I want to take a step-by-step approach in actually looking at this from an evolutionary perspective, right? The first thing is industrial automation happened centuries back, and that has led to a lot of advancements in society. But what we are seeing today with respect to the art of possible, with respect to AI or humanoids that leverage AI or, in a collaborative process automation that a human worker could be going through, it's all getting accelerated because of advances in the infrastructure side of things. You can see companies like Nvidia that are investing in the tech itself, and we haven't seen such investments going in, probably not in the last 3 decades, into the core infrastructure part itself. So that's a space where we are going to see a lot of advances happen, Christian. And I'm sure like your listeners would probably be interested in that space because there are a lot of public companies that are now investing. Like, you have AWS, you have Microsoft, you have, Meta, everybody's investing in that infrastructure space. So that's actually going to be the bedrock on which a lot of this innovation is going to happen. But when you look at this from an industry perspective, as consumers, we are in our lives today using a certain level of automation. And you can think of this evolution as being very similar to when the PCs actually had Microsoft DOS and Windows evolve over time that helped enhance productivity. So human workers actually leveraged technology even 3 decades back or 4 decades back to kind of be more productive. The question now becomes as to how collaborative can they be so that, call for a lack of better word, call it cobotic automation, right? You got to collaborate with robots, whether it's an industrial setting or in a, office-based setting, but you got to know how to work with them. And for our kids, they are going through a generational shift in technology that's going to see them adopt, that's actually seeing they are adopting technology probably at a much faster pace than us. But they got to understand as they move into the workforce, what do they have to do to make sure that they can collaborate with this technology in a much better way so they can be more productive? And for a lot of the current workers today, it's a question of how they would need to upskill themselves to work with that technology better and be more productive at it. So that's how I would probably look at how the workforce is being disrupted, what's in it for workers there today, and what's in it for workers that are going to probably enter the workforce. Now, this is on the industrial automation or the office automation side of things. On the human side of things, as a society, we are seeing a lot of advances. You mentioned about longevity, for instance. This is a space that we believe has a lot of potential. One of the investments that we have made as a fund is into Calorify, which is into they are kind of accelerating our understanding of metabolism and how we as humans can think of metabolism in a very practical manner. So they kind of are giving you the energy budgeting tools that would allow you to understand your energy expenditure and make best use of what you have available to make informed decisions about your habits. This is going to be so fundamental. The technology that comes in from a bio or life sciences perspective is probably going to accelerate things or be an accelerator for your life in a lot of different ways. But without that bedrock of us understanding more about our body, we probably won't be able to benefit from what, accelerators in the bio or life sciences can do. A good example, is energy supplements. A lot of us probably use energy supplements, a lot of us don't. Why does it work for some of us? Why doesn't it work for, the rest? It's a mystery, right? And having access to technology that will help us understand this better is going to be so fundamental for us to think about concepts such as longevity. And we see a lot of opportunity in this space, and we're always looking for opportunities to invest in this space as a fund.
It's as I'm listening, I can't help but infer you're extremely optimistic about the future. And I would agree with you. I think it can be really easy to be pessimistic
Very true.
if we don't look at the how, invariably as new technology has come online, the stagecoach, the car, take your pick. We've just adapted and have figured out ways to not only better allocate capital, but then how to thrive in those things. So it makes great sense. And I do, I agree. I think the future is really bright. I think any of our listeners, especially college students, are thinking, you should be asking the question of what does the world look like and how do I work with it? And have just an optimistic outlook. Hey, if we can put hypergrowth aside for the moment, let's go to Santa Clara University. Would love to know how you spend your time at the school.
Absolutely. So today I teach marketing and venture capital. I also am involved in teaching a course on digital strategy and transformation. So I get an opportunity to learn firsthand what are the trends that really matter, right? And at the school, we have a lot of initiatives going on. We have an accelerator called the Bronco Venture Accelerator. It's been around for 6 years. My own startup, Hyperstack, where I'm a co-founder. Today, my we have been successful only because of the opportunities that the school has given us. And we went through an ideation phase, a prep school phase, pre-revenue, and then the accelerator when we reached revenue stage. So there are a lot of resources available at Santa Clara University, mainly from like a startup ecosystem perspective. As you can imagine, being the oldest school in California, started in the 1800s, we have a lot of innovation that's happening around us here in the Valley through peer schools that, we have Stanford, we have Berkeley, others. But at Santa Clara, we believe that, the industry collaboration is going to be very important. So there's a lot of outreach. Like I'm part of the business school. We have a lot of outreach that's happening to business partners, industry partners that offer a lot of value for our students. We had just in the business school, for instance, more than 500 guests that actually came through. We have a registration process where we track all of this, as you can imagine, for the different classes. So whether it's introducing innovation practically in the classroom or whether it's innovation that's happening around the classroom that we can expose our students to, we have a great gateway for our students that they can leverage. We have the Arts and Science School, we have the Engineering School, we have the Business School, the Law School. So everything is covered over here. Students, if they want to have access to innovation but want help from like a legal perspective for their startup, they can go to the Law School. So tremendous amount of resources, and we look forward to the future, of actually co-creating this innovation with industry partners and other academia partners. Yeah.
I mean, it's brilliant, and it doesn't take a lot of logic to see the value in being able to take advantage of all of these resources and expertise that exists at a school. And so, shout out to Santa Clara. That's brilliant. And I didn't know they were the oldest college in California.
Yeah, it's interesting. Berkeley, Santa Clara, and I think the University of Pacific, if I'm right, all started around the same time. But Santa Clara was the first to start offering classes. And the mission here, which is also a very old mission, I think was from 1777, if I remember right. And it's one of the, I guess, oldest missions here, has been rebuilt a few times due to incidents, but we are extremely fortunate that we have been associated in the Valley for so long, and I'm incredibly blessed to be an alumni as well as now back, teaching there as well. So I'm actually what is called a Super Bronco, which means that I went to school here and came back to work here as well. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I gotta imagine it's extremely fulfilling being able to watch future alum coming through the program.
Most definitely. Yeah, most definitely. Yeah.
So if we could do this now, take a step back. I would love to understand what your career progression looked like leading up to today.
Awesome. Yeah, let's do that. I wanted to be a doctor when I was growing up, but God saved all the patients and I became an engineer by accident. So, that's what got me started in the industry. I, was a product engineer, came to the States within a year of me, starting to work, went back and then came back here long term in 99. I landed in Chicago, moved to the West Coast. But for the last 25 years, I've been blessed to be here in Silicon Valley, witnessing a lot of changes. As you can imagine, we had the dot-com bust that happened, the boom and the bust that happened around the time in 2000. And then, I saw the 2008 financial crisis from here, how, different it was from the previous one. COVID happened, but, I was witness to a lot of events here, being here in the Valley. But I moved from product engineering to IT consulting to operation strategy, went through to the tech industry. But during that time, I got an opportunity to do my MBA at Santa Clara. And it was probably one of the most pivotal moments in my life. Got me hooked onto the startup ecosystem. So today I worked with more than 100 startups, and I've actually mentored a lot of founders. I coach a lot of founders. I have a methodology called Pitch Adventure, which I help them through, think about their pitch, going before investors as founders, and then doing it. And as a encore founder myself, I know the trouble, that one has to go through, not having the right mentor, not having the right coach. But having them actually makes a big difference. And I found that in my case, like, you know, it was extremely helpful. So giving has become a big part of my philosophy being here in the Valley, because I benefited from very benevolent mentors, and I want to make sure that I actually propagate that. So my journey has been made possible because of the support system I got through Santa Clara University when I was doing my MBA here, but also because of the mentors that made it possible for me to be part of the startup ecosystem here and thrive. So that's where, you know, I actually, like, you know, I want to actually, like, reflect back, and you know, I'm very thankful for that. But being in tech was a blessing for me, Christian. Why? Because I've seen the transformation from software to cloud and SaaS, infrastructure as a service, to blockchain, to AI, you know, seen a lot of things happen. And that motivated me to be an angel investor. You know, as a management consultant in PwC, I was working with Series A through D startups, you know, helping them go to market jointly with them in terms of offering solutions to our clients. But once I decided to come into the startup ecosystem, that's when the journey of Hypergrowth Lab started. And I transitioned to advising startups, and then I got interested to invest in them as an angel. And that motivated me to think about what's the impact I can have, what's the legacy that I'm going to have, and you know, how do I make sure that I can scale this? Being an angel investor, as you can, I can imagine, is a very easy thing to do, but it's incredibly hard to imagine the impact doing investments one by one. But setting up a fund helped me, you know, have this impact at scale. And that's where the first money fund under Hypergrowth Lab Capital came in. As you can imagine, you know, starting from being an engineer to being a VC, I've gone through a lot. And this process, I've also, you know, started teaching about 10 years back at Santa Clara University. I was teaching management consulting, and then today I teach marketing, venture capital, and digital transformation. So, gone through a lot in my life in terms of, you know, learning a lot, absorbing a lot. Now it's time to share and give back to community, which is what I'm doing, you know, by teaching and by being a VC.
I love it. And you know, I have to imagine it gives you this really unique perspective, right? Because you can before you put your due diligence lenses on, you can take a step back and just objectively have a conversation with somebody and you know, say this is my perspective, and then take that and hone it
Yeah.
over time as to how you're then subsequently
That's
going
right.
to deploy capital. You mentioned, is it, did I hear the name right? A pitch venture or pitcher venture?
Venture. Yeah. So it's a methodology that I created for Hypergrowth Labs. A lot of times, and I'm going to be doing this session next week for founders. The program is called Startup with Sriram. It's a new program that I'm launching for founders to get help. From a mentoring perspective, they would come onto the episode to share their views. But it starts off as a Q&A for them to kind of understand what is it that is their biggest problem today, and what are some of the resources available for them. One of the resources that founders don't have access to is they create a pitch deck, but they don't know how to tell a story. And oftentimes, as you know, telling that story becomes so important, but telling that story with impact is what is going to move it for them in terms of getting that mind share from the investor and making sure that they can actually, like, convince the investor to trust them with you know, their investment. So I, you know, help founders to refine their pitch. So I do these sessions at accelerators where I go and talk to founders, help them craft their pitch, and then go prepared for demo day.
And so no substitute for participating in the program, but for benefits of our audience, any key takeaways that you would leave someone who's thinking about what are the ways that they can improve how they deliver
Yeah,
their.
you know, it's a great question. One of the key takeaways that I've had personally as well is, you know, not being a native English speaker, is how to use the power of a pause. Make sure you stop and, you know, grab the attention and then go about, you know, continuing. A lot of times it's very hard for me as a non-native English speaker to kind of communicate the same way I can do in my mother tongue, in English. Like, you know, if I have to say something, I have to know how to use the power of communication tools effectively And one of the best, you know, mechanisms I've found is just pause, take a breath. And the beauty of this is it also gives you an opportunity to listen. That pause, when somebody has a question, you don't have to interrupt them. You don't have to continue the flow and keep going. Reflect, like, you know, and that point of reflection is only made possible because that pause gives you the opportunity to absorb, reflect, and then respond rather than react.
Yeah, you know, you reminded me of, obviously a pitch could be compared to just a sales process. And I, you know, it doesn't happen as often anymore, but I would run into salespeople and we would joke because they would show up and throw up. They would just start talking and not stop
Oh, yeah.
and not realize that, you know, part of the success in selling is understanding your who's buying from you.
That's true. Yes.
In this case, if there's a parallel between an investor cutting a check, I mean, you know, if you don't understand them or listen to them, as you point out, you know, you could be way off base.
Yeah.
One of the things we try to make an effort of surfacing in the podcast is that, you know, for every different type of industry and segment and opportunity, there's a different investor. And so
Yeah.
to presume that just because someone's listening, you know, in front of somebody, that it's necessarily a match for timing, size, geography. You could be spending a lot of time spinning your tires.
Absolutely. That's if I could add to that, Christian, you're so right. Understanding that persona who's in front of you is so important. And that's the I think a second takeaway for your audience is it's came about so beautifully here in this conversation is how do you make sure you craft your pitch by understanding the persona better and then creating that connection? And making that connection is possible only when you listen to them, you understand them well, and you're able to craft your pitch or fine-tune your pitch for that. Because oftentimes you have the ingredients. There's, you know, no question about it. But bringing those ingredients together with the right measure and to make sure that you can mix them at the right time makes a lot of difference. And if you understand the persona and the timing is right and you pitch it well, you're going to have a magic story that happens right there.
Yeah. And distilling into something as simple as the pause, I think is a great coaching cue.
So
Because
true.
everyone's going to understand what that is, but I think it's a great reminder just to say, hey, listen, see what they have to say. Hey, before a couple more questions on hypergrowth, but before we do, I'm kind of fascinated that you're in the classroom. And I'd love to know, has there been a moment where you've had an epiphany while in front of the class, and it subsequently resulted in you making an investment in a specific product technology?
A great question. We have had a couple of our students in our class that at least in the venture capital class, who have gone on to start their own funds.
Oh.
And that you know was actually a validation of sorts because you know as you can imagine like you know I think I mentioned this in our conversation earlier but if not you know I've created a program called the Certified VC Program for folks to kind of go through starting their fund as they are actually learning about venture capital as an option for them to think about instead of just thinking of themselves as angel investors or if they are thinking about like, you know, just investing in startups, how do they do it in a very structured way? But as I created that program, I realized that there is a lot of power in enabling, you know, students who are interested in becoming VCs to practically, you know, have the partnerships needed to start the fund. And that was an epiphany that happened because of how I, you know, could get inputs from different stakeholders through the process, as well as from the students in the classroom. That's something that, you know, happened. To your question, has this happened in the classroom? There have been instances where I would have interacted with students, you know, as a judge or as a, you know, faculty listening to their pitches. And I would have offered a follow-on conversation to them, which is typically how it happens, right? No investments happens right away on the spot. There are a few things that we need to do, including the due diligence, as you pointed out. So there's a process to it, but the very, next step to an introduction is probably a good follow-up call. And that's actually a great outcome for founders. If you meet somebody in the elevator and you have a follow-up call that was set up from that conversation, that's a great outcome for you as a founder. And the same thing has happened to a few of my students, in them actually getting interested to start their fund, in them actually pitching and probably getting me interested to have a discussion with them, either to be an advisor starting off or a mentor to start off, or considering an investment. Yes.
I love it. I mean, it's a win on so many levels. Okay, so let's build on that. Let's cut over to hypergrowth.
Yeah.
So I understand, hypergrowth will generally be a first institutional check.
That's right.
That
Yeah,
is.
that's right. Yeah.
And so what's your perspective on, I don't think capital is capital. And in fact, I'd argue that, first institutional money in is significant relative to
Very
follow.
true.
What's your perspective and how hypergrowth has a bigger impact in being a founder's, non-family and friends realm?
Yeah, and a great question, Christian. A lot of times, founders don't understand the stage they are in and the type of capital that they need or the type of money that they need. And you are actually in the world of finance, so you probably would understand this. Every form of money has a very different expectation when it comes to return. Like debt capital is very different than equity. And from that perspective, even equity can come in different forms. Today, at least here in the US, we are incredibly blessed to have different forms of financial instruments like safes, convertible notes, and direct equity infusion that would allow for a founder to have the flexibility needed when they are at an early stage or at a growth stage. And founders have to understand their, I guess, stage in the life cycle they are in and kind of make a decision as to who do they want to engage with. That's actually the first question they should be solving for. And then comes the question around how much should I ask for? Because you don't want to go all debt and say, I want to raise a $10 million in debt, right? You want to figure out what's the right balance here. If somebody is coming in from like a PE perspective versus a VC perspective, how do I have to consider both of these options? Because to the founder, it may seem like, hey, 5 million here, 5 million there seems the same or looks the same, but they both have very different expectations. How do they understand this and how do they play to it, right? So that's actually something that's important. And going back to your question on the fund itself, at Hypergrowth Labs, we love to partner with our ecosystem partners and be one of the co-investors in that round. Sometimes we could be, one of the two. Sometimes it could be one of the five, that they are in. But even if they don't qualify for, an investment from us, maybe because we are not the right partner at that stage to invest in them, we try to see if there is someone else that we can introduce to that can actually listen to their story. And maybe, we get a second opinion or a validation done as well. So we do that as well for founders. So we know if someone else is the right partner for them at that stage, because maybe the size of the fund that they're looking for is different. As you can imagine, angel and pre-seed has a very different nature of risk than, somebody that's actually at a growth stage. So we go up to Series A sometimes. But only when we have an opportunity to go into secondary do we exceed the Series A stage.
Get it. So let's continue on that. So back to now coming to your investment thesis. I understand there's this emphasis on what's going to cause disruption.
Yeah.
And so it'd be interesting to know, you have young founders. This could be their first foray into an investment-backed company. And it makes sense that if you're going to create a product that has the potential to disrupt the market, whether it's biotech or the product itself,
Yeah.
You also have to reframe how you necessarily think about coming at the market. What guidance do you provide to either your students or your founders who you invest in as they think about coming to market with products where they may be forced to have to take, excuse me, make a segment where, because it's a brand new technology that doesn't necessarily, that hasn't necessarily been adopted yet?
Great question. Oftentimes there are founders that would come and tell you that, hey, Sriram, look, we have a path-breaking product that is going to solve everything that could be imagined as a problem in this space, right? But execution matters, and delivering results matter. And so what we look for is, if this is a problem that you are solving differently, and it's an innovation that is so disruptive, how can we make sure we can help you take this to market to validate it quickly? That's going to be really important to understand. So we work with founders to kind of chart that path, and that's where Build a Venture Accelerator comes in for us. The accelerator is really there, and it's a bespoke accelerator. We don't take in cohorts of like 10, 15, 20 people and then make them go through the cohort. We really bring in founders that we think we understand well in terms of what their needs are and how they have to probably go after product market fit, and then fit them with mentors just in those areas where we think they need help. We take a holistic approach to evaluating them, but we try to take an approach of, where is it that they need help? Is it from the product strategy perspective to understand the problem better so they can actually recraft their product roadmap and the strategy to make sure they are delivering on what they need to absolutely deliver as an MVP? So that's actually an area that we help with. Or it could be just as simple as something related to operations. A lot of times we get startup founders that are in capital intensive businesses, which have a need for us to take a look at how they are managing the cash flow and looking at their working capital needs very closely to kind of understand this better. That's where some of our partners would come in, or our mentors would come in that would help us, do this. So there are different areas, Christian, as you can imagine, where founders need help. And we try to identify each of those areas and make sure that they're actually, getting adequate help. And this way they are actually, able to tell their story better to not just us as investors, but to others as well. And we believe it's a duty upon us to make sure that before we make an introduction, we're absolutely convinced that a founder is worthy of that introduction and that a startup is worthy of the introduction. Not that founders lack, trust and credibility, but beyond trust and credibility, we have to convince ourselves before we try to convince others. We believe in that, and we want to make sure we help founders the right way. So as a thesis, we want to make sure we invest in opportunistic ideas that actually hit the future or target the future, but we want to make sure that the founders can absolutely deliver, and they are, at least we can help them in that path so that we can introduce them to partners that can help them deliver on that vision, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it does make great sense. I mean, there's, absolutely a recurring theme on the podcast. And again, for the benefit of our founder audience, accepting investor dollars is a big deal. And, obviously, depending on the stage, will dictate the work that's going to be involved to make sure that you're finding a good match, you're satisfying due diligence, because it is hard, as you point out. It's a multivariate formula, or success is a multivariate formula. There's no one way, and so there's a tremendous amount of iteration that has to take place. And so, it sounds like I'll applaud Build a Venture. It's on the right track. There are a number of programs I've come across over the years where there's just an understanding that, depending on which component of the business, whether it's sales, whether it's technology, you absolutely it there's not a one size fits all. And surrounding yourself with mentors who can provide you guidance, either because they've been there, done that, or they're familiar with, or intimately familiar with the core subject, absolutely makes a difference. And I would encourage any and all founders to really take that to heart, as you point out, because discerning investors are going to look at that. Knowing how complex it can be to scale a business.
Very true.
Sriram, it's been a great podcast. Before we wrap up, one of my favorite go-to questions is a retrospective. And so if you had an opportunity to go back and have a conversation with your younger self, what would you share?
Wow. What an incredibly insightful question. I think I have been fortunate, Christian, to be here in the US probably more than half my life and benefit from a lot of things here. But the power of mentoring is something that I have benefited from immensely. There is a book called Who Believed in You by that I actually had an opportunity. Dana McCormick, who's actually the author or co-author of that book, actually I had an opportunity to be at the book signing there, at the book event there in Stanford, and got to see that book, where I kind of reflected back and I said, oh my God, it's so powerful. The power of the mentoring that I received was so helpful for me. And I wish I had got this when I was actually in high school or in college, when I was in doing my undergraduate, to have guided me. Not that I didn't have an advisor or I didn't have a faculty advisor. As you can imagine, that plays an incredibly powerful role too in shaping up our academic journey. But the journey of life is, that journey is so different. And having a mentor makes a big difference. And I wish, I had a mentor at that point in time. So my advice to any of your listeners, whether they are a student that's interested in entrepreneurship or anybody that's a professional that's interested in your podcast for the content or the subject area, is to find a mentor. To the founders that are listening to your podcast, if you don't have a mentor, get a mentor. Get the one person that you think would believe in you, that would help you the right way. And that's the same advice I would give myself, my younger self.
Well, you're in good company.
Love it.
It's fun to unpack. I don't know if it was because out of ignorance or pride, but I couldn't agree with you more. If you can shorten the learning curve by surrounding yourself with people who can give you great guidance, 100% agreement. And
Yeah.
sooner the better.
Yeah, awesome.
It's. Sriram, last question before we wrap up. If one of a more recent question I started asking our guests, if there's anyone in your network that you think our listeners would benefit having on the podcast, who would you suggest?
You've been having on the podcast?
Yes.
An interesting founder would be Hari Mix from Calorify. He's actually like a founder that we have invested in. I'll give you two, actually. I have Asim Mastara, who's a good friend of mine, who's actually like my classmate from MBA, and Franco, that's actually the founder of Amelino AI, and they are in the RevOps space. So these are two founders that I absolutely love that I'm currently working with now, and big shout out to them for sure.
All right. Well, we're going to add them to the list and see what we can do to get them on and get.
Absolutely. Christian, I would, offer one advice if I can for any of your listeners. I know, we are out of time, but the last one I would have for anyone is to make sure that, for them to really find mentors is going to be incredibly hard if they don't have access to a network. But the best tool possible, which I didn't have at that time when I was actually a student, or an early stage professional, was LinkedIn. And what I tell my students today is, find three people on LinkedIn that inspire you, that have taken a career path that you think you are interested in, or the journey of entrepreneurship that you think that you're interested in, and reach out to them and talk to them. The worst thing that can happen is they say no, or I don't have time, or they don't respond. But the best thing that can happen to you is they give you their time, and you have the opportunity to kind of understand from them what's worked for them, and if they can be a good mentor for you through that process. Because as you can imagine, even getting a mentor is a journey. That's the best thing that can happen to you. And I would leave that as a last word of advice for any of your listeners.
I love it. I think it's great advice, and I would second that. And I take it a step further and say, go big. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And the irony of it is that maybe you didn't want to talk to whoever doesn't want to talk to you. So
Love it. I love it. I love it, Christian. I mean, you said it so well. I think you it really complements what, I was saying before and just exponentially, has a bigger impact. I love it.
awesome. Well, Shiram, if there are any of our listeners want to get a hold of you, how can they find you?
LinkedIn, is a good way to actually reach me. You can search for Sriram Sundararajan, but if you go to hypergrowthlabs.com, you would be able to see the contact form. You can use that. Or just email me at sriram@hypergrowthlabs.com.
Thank you, Sriram. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. And again, for the benefit of our audience, Sriram Sundararajan. Again, Sriram is the founder and managing partner at Hypergrowth Labs Capital. He's also a faculty with marketing at NVC at Santa Clara University. Sriram, thank you.
Christian, thank you so much again for having me on your podcast. Really appreciate it. And God bless all your listeners. And I wish, they benefit more from listening to all your episodes. Yeah.
Our pleasure. And with that, again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder, CEO of FinStrat Management. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Take care. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com. Or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @FinstratMGMT. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.